This is for you, this is for you and me, and who we see when we see each other. This is for all, this is for all the time you tried to find your sister or your brother. And you're not crazy anymore, you've been waiting at the door.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
Time to open. You are listening to Waking Up in America, Dynamic Radio Dialogues on Life Today in America, brought to you by www.happily200.hghbreakthrough.com. Once again, www.happily200.hghbreakthrough.com. Today's show is called Gratitude, Grace, and Hacking. This show is brought to you by Key Media, RandyShannon.com, Bragg.com with two G's, Happily200.com, TheConingCompany.com, SirJasonWinterT, and DrVal.com, and Doctor is all spelled out. We have with us today Judge Anna Von Reitz, a Superior Court judge from Alaska. What a wonderful trip this woman is. You're just going to have the time of your life. Yes, she's every bit as amazing as you think she is. Bob Sercosta of the Home Shopping Network says we're doing radio that is changing the world. Well, we're certainly talking to the world, and we thank you for your endorsement, Bob. Hear a telephone ringing, a dog barking, an angel singing. We call in from our homes and offices around the world to create this program. Anna's actually coming in from Alaska. Randy's in Florida. Paul's here in California. We're all over the place. Sherry and I are in California, and good old Mike's in Albuquerque. Pulling the strings on this whole thing to keep us in one conversation. Now, when Jesus spoke in Aramaic in the Lord's Prayer, that word pray actually means to go out into the world and get that which is yours. It doesn't mean fall down on your knees and kiss somebody's feet and beg them for something, okay? And please, always include a prayer for the celebration of our republic, for the United States, for America, for our animal friends, as well as for each other in our communities, and take around and look around and see where you can be of service. Our program is dedicated to happily200.com, the possibility of living to be 200 years old, erasing evil, and creating a grand future. Our nation is structured in Christian values. The Ten Commandments work, guys. Let's take a moment. Bauer has an appreciation for the men and women who have risked their lives and fortunes for our future. If you have questions while we're on air, you can tweet Randy, R-A-N-D-I, at Randy Shannon, and that's with two N's. And you can follow me on Twitter at ValKirkgaard1, and that's with two A's. Our topic today is what can we do for ourselves to be stronger and wiser in this world. And if you're sitting at your computer, hop on over to Anna Von, V-O-N-R-E-I-T-Z.com. Anna is Alaska State Superior Court Judge of the Republic, the actual Republic State, one of the several states of the constitutional United States. And boy, get a paper and pen, because you're going to hear some stuff that you're going to go, they never said that in school. So Anna, thank you. Sherry, thank you for going to Alaska and picking up Anna and bringing her down here on dog sled for us today.
My pleasure.
Anna, would you, I looked for a bio on you, give us your best point of view of how you would like people to recognize you, because I'm just so honored to have you here.
Well, I basically grew up in the Midwest in Wisconsin. I was born and raised in Wisconsin, grew up and moved all over the world, and finally came to rest in Alaska when I was about 30. Anyway, so it's just a very regular
kind of life. Was your family in the military by any chance?
No. I just had sort of a wanderlust when I was young, and I moved around. I had the opportunity to do so, sort of satisfied my curiosity about the planet, and had lots of adventures early on so that I was ready to settle down and have a family and be at peace, or so I thought I was going to be at peace.
Good yeah, try there.
But actually, I had pretty much retired from any kind of active work and got drawn back into things because of what I had found out, and it was actually kind of was an odd situation in that I really do feel called to this work.
Yep.
I had a peculiar experience. I was walking home from my son's house one day in the fall, and I was counting my blessings and just sort of marveling at all the different things that had happened over my life, that, you know, people I'd met and things I'd seen and opportunities I'd had and gifts I'd been given. And I just said to myself, well, you know, God must have had a reason. You know, there must be a reason for all this. It's all too purposeful and too perfect. You know, someone obviously gave me all this for a reason. And so I just sort of said, well, if there's a reason, you know, I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'll do whatever you want.
Kind of like if there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, it was a very odd thing. It had never occurred to me that we have to ask God or express our willingness to go before he'll send us. But that was indeed my experience, and I sort of raised my hand like David and said, I'll go. I didn't have to wait long for the invitation to be taken up. Within 3 days, I was up to my neck in a major battle with the IRS, which proved to be my final major battle with the IRS. I had been struggling with them off and on for a period of 17 years because they would not honor my revocation of election to pay federal taxes. They kept coming back and coming back. And indeed, to this day, sometimes I'll get an eager beaver young, young
intern,
IRS agent. Yeah, somebody who hasn't butted heads with me or doesn't know my case, and they will come after me and ask me questions. And it's always kind of funny because, you know, I send them scurrying back into their cage so fast it makes their head spin. But, you know, they've owed us the right to revocation all along. But these are private bill collectors, and they just don't take no for an answer very easily. And their bosses, for some reason, in Washington, D.C., have been entirely reneged on telling them the truth about, you know, their status and the fact that they're just a private bill collector working for a government corporation. And instead, they've had this very, what can I say, grandiose idea that they were working for the government and they had some sort of special power over everything and everyone. And it's all very irritating because the federal government is working in international jurisdiction always, and they have been at war since 1861 when the Civil War started. And so they have a very military organization, and they have military law, and they function according to military tribunals. And as a result, they have a very different attitude and a very different idea of, you know, what they're doing and what their requirements are with respect to people versus normal civilian life. And so people often are outraged by the way they're treated by the federal government and its agents. But it's the same kind of difference that goes on when you join the Army. You go to boot camp and everybody's bossing you around and you're just a buck private and everybody gets to tell you what to do and how to do it and how fast to do it and where to do it and how long to do it, how high to jump, all of that. That's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the federal government and they are presuming that you're a U.S. citizen. Now, I don't know about most of you, but where I grew up, it was presumed that everyone was a U.S. citizen. And they went to great lengths to impress upon us that we were U.S. citizens. And certainly, I don't think it ever occurred to me until I was probably 17 or 18 that I could be anything else but a U.S. citizen. And the problem is...
What did you actually 17 or 18?
Well, that I might not be an American, that I might not be a U.S. citizen, I might be an American citizen.
Interesting that you had that thought.
Yeah, well, it came about because I realized that people from Puerto Rico were U.S. citizens at that point. I'm not exactly sure anymore how that came about, but I realized that they were called U.S. citizens, and I knew that they were born and raised in the territories, the insular states that belonged to the United States, and that they were under British hegemony. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. How can I be a U.S. citizen if they're a U.S. citizen, right?
Right.
Well, the answer is, as in so many cases with this, there are numerous meanings to U.S. citizen. Back before the Civil War, people that were part of the free, sovereign, and independent people of the United States were called U.S. citizens when they went through a specific process and chose to serve the federal government in some capacity. And that still goes on today. But
can we go back to 1860 when Lincoln was elected and the whole United States system started to fall apart? Because I think that's absolutely fascinating. And Lincoln is usually associated with the Gettysburg Address and the Civil War, but what you were talking about this morning was astounding. And if any other team member has a question, toss it in here, guys. So would you tell us what happened in 1860, Anna? Because this, I think, fits in with the citizenship and the lawyer conversation.
Well, yeah, it does all kind of tie in. And I was sort of getting to that our actual nationality is determined at birth by where we're born, so that we're actually Texans or Floridians or Wisconsinites or Minnesotans or Californians. And that is our nationality. That's our nation state, right?
Right.
And that's the land jurisdiction state that we actually belong to. And then if we were to serve in our actual state government, we would be called citizens of that state, because the word citizen implies a duty to serve the government. And that is the crucial piece of information everybody lacks. If you are a citizen, you serve the government. If you're mm-hmm. not a citizen, the government serves you. So unless you're getting a paycheck for actually doing work for the government, you're not a citizen. Period.
I love it. Especially California. We have Governor Moonbeam, and Paul has plenty to say about him, too, as do the rest of us Californians. So what do you do when you don't want to serve the government of your state because it's been taken over, too? I think it all dates back to the conversation of 1860, how they started, faking us out.
Yeah, well, What happened in 1860 has to be understood in terms of international jurisdiction. Okay, so California is your nation, right? You were born a Californian. That's your nationality. Then you go along a little bit beyond the nation and get into international waters, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, the national jurisdiction is the jurisdiction of the land, right? So California is your nation, and that's your land, and that's where you have your feet on the ground, if you were born in California. But then there's international jurisdiction, and for us, that means interstate, because our states are nations, right? So interstate in America is exactly the same as international jurisdiction. When they constructed the Constitution, they did a very interesting thing. They split the powers of international jurisdiction. And that was the principal result of the Constitutional Service Agreement. In international jurisdiction, every nation has a great number of different powers that they can exercise in international jurisdiction. And the Constitution gave up 19 specific enumerated powers in international jurisdiction to this newly formed entity called the United States. All right, so you have the United States of America, which is an association of nation states, and together they gave up some of their powers in international jurisdiction. They delegated those powers to the federal entity that was created, the United States, which again is here to provide stipulated services. Okay, so 19 powers of the international jurisdiction belonging to the United States of America got split off and delegated to the United States, and the United States was and is always under the control of the British monarch. Well, why would our forefathers do anything so stupid after fighting for 8 years to get outside of the British hegemony? It came down to this. The Americans at the end of the Revolutionary War were just barely making it. They had been ravaged by 8 years of war. They had a lot of commercial products, and they had a lot of agricultural products especially, which were needed by Europe. And they had a merchant fleet, but they didn't have a navy. It would take many years before they'd actually have a competent navy. And they didn't have the means or the time to build a navy to protect their commercial shipping. So they cut a deal with the British king that they just recently had this war with to be their trustee on the high seas navigable inland waterways. And in exchange for these delegated powers, he agreed to be their trustee and to protect the commercial fleet. So we had the British man of wars out there protecting our commercial fleet in the high seas. And that's what the entire thing was about. The trusteeship on one hand and the ability to exercise these 19 powers on the other. Okay, so what happened to the undelegated powers in international jurisdiction? Well, they had to be exercised also. So we have a split between delegated and non-delegated powers in the international jurisdiction. And that you will see in Amendment 10, where it very explicitly says all of the powers not delegated are retained by the states or the people. All right. So we still have all sorts of powers that were not given away to the British king in the international jurisdiction. Okay, against that backdrop, USA, think non-delegated powers. U.S., think delegated powers. And the USA actually, by delegating the powers, retains the ability to undelegate those powers. Okay? So the big dog on the walk is supposed to be the United States of America, which is supposed to control the U.S. So keep that in the back of your mind, too, as you go through this. All right, so there's always been this back and forth between these two populations, the free, sovereign, and independent people of the United States and the British inhabitants that were left here after the Revolution to provide essential governmental services as part of this overall peace agreement. Always had two populations, USA, representing the several different states that are members of the United States of America Association, which is unincorporated, and the United States, which is, and always has been, a corporation. So you have the unincorporated USA, you have the incorporated U.S., you have the Americans, and you have the British. And that's how it all started, and essentially, that's how it all ends up.
You know, we were talking about, before the show, about how Lincoln was an attorney, and
yes.
The presidencies, and why Trump was having, why Trump was scaring the crap out of him. I was wondering if you would address that.
Yeah, well, that's right where I'm going, is that I have to explain the titles of nobility of him.
That actually other people need to be able to ask you questions and stuff. So I'm
sure.
Wanting to make space for that to happen. We could have
right.
you on air all day.
Well,
no kidding. I'm a history major, okay? And this never was in any history I studied.
I don't know why it isn't, but it isn't. It's not something you get into unless you happen to snoop into it yourself and do it at
And I want Paul to come in here, too. And Sherry's done a heck of a lot of research, and so has Randy. And we're all sitting here going, wow. I can see in the air.
Huh.
But what I want to do is get into some more brevity here, just simply because of time, because I really want to support... I want to support Donald Trump and what's going on now. And
well,
I want you to be my partner in helping blow away some of the blatant baloney and the smog that's been being thrown on our government at this time. And I think you're the perfect person to do it. So, Paul, do you have anything you want to comment? Randy, Sherry?
Well, you know, I can't comment... significantly because I became a naturalized U.S. citizen, but in the process and over the years, you know, have concluded that not all citizens are created equal. In the Orwellian sense, you know, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And I think the good judge has highlighted, you know, some of those, how should we say, inequalities. But, you know, it's a sad commentary that no matter how strong your U.S. citizenship might be, you always seem to be at risk from the federal government. And you can't invoke your citizenship and stand up in court and say, I am a U.S. citizen and I expect to be treated like one. The fact that that potentially fails is a sad commentary on our society.
Well, there's the problem right there, is that when you say you're a U.S. citizen and you want to be treated like one, you're basically inviting them to treat you like a private in the military and do whatever they want with you. Because a citizen who is under contract to serve the government can't get service from the government.
I don't question that at all. You're absolutely right. The intrinsic flaw is that we think we have rights as U.S. citizens, when at any moment at the drop of a hat, those rights can evaporate.
They can, except that Congress would have to make a move and say that equal civil rights did not apply.
Yeah, they never existed, really. The indication that they were there existed, but according to what you're saying, Anna, they were never there for us.
Well, okay, two different groups of people. You have the Americans, the Californians, the Wisconsinites, Texans, who have natural and unalienable rights, okay? The land jurisdiction is the place where you have absolute control and parity, and you have your Constitution, remember, law of the land? This is land jurisdiction.
Right.
So if you're standing on the land jurisdiction and you are a Californian, you are the king of the entire country. You own it. It's yours. You're the landlord, okay? And you're owed the constitutional guarantees, the law of the land from the federal perspective, all right? But if you're standing there saying that you're a U.S. citizen, well, then you have the same exact political status as someone from Puerto Rico. And the U.S. government can say or do whatever it likes with you because you are their slave. You are a citizen. Citizen means that you have a duty to obey and work for and give to the government instead of the government having responsibilities toward you.
Lonnie Hogan-Miller was telling us that the only true citizens of the United States are the residents of Washington, D.C. Is that true?
Well, yeah, basically, because everybody else is a territorial citizen. You've got municipal citizens, and they are the citizens of Washington, D.C., right? And then you have territorial citizens, and that includes people from Puerto Rico and Guam, and as it has turned out, the state-of-state organizations that have proliferated throughout the country are also territorial citizens. Or municipal citizens. The municipality of Washington, D.C. has usurped way beyond its stipulated territory. It's supposed to exist only in the 10 square miles of the District of Columbia and only within the municipal limits of Washington, D.C.
Because when I went to Barack Obama's inauguration, I actually met the senator from Washington, D.C., and he said they were a shadow government and they didn't even get to vote. The senator had no voice to represent Washington,
right.
D.C. I was amazed.
Well, no. It's always been set aside as a separate foreign enclave. Washington, D.C. and District of Columbia are foreign governments on our shores. People need to understand that.
Out. Anna, tell us how we get these buggers out.
Well, you have the power to do it if you can convene a Continental Congress of the actual state and do so. You can do whatever you want, but you have to get the correct organizations to act. Which means that you have to have enough people who are willing to stand up and say, I'm not a U.S. citizen, I'm a Californian. I'm a Wisconsinite. I'm a Texan. And then bring those together to form a state Congress, basically a state assembly is what they're called, technically. And you get 37 state assemblies to vote on making an amendment to the Constitution, you can do whatever you like. But you see, because the land jurisdiction states have not met in that kind of an assembly for 150 years, the hired servants have kind of run wild over us, done whatever they please.
We did meet in Windwalker in 2010, November, and we did create the document, the Declaration of Sovereign Intent, and it was signed by 38 states. And it was filed at The Hague.
Right, and then I took that sovereign intent and issued sovereign letters patent, which should have been done a long time before that, but which finally did get done within the time frame. So we issued new sovereign letters patent. But in order to change the whole structure of things, you would have to have a Continental Congress go in and debate the way the Constitution is functioning now. And to tell you the truth, I don't see the kind of education required to do that. I just don't see that a Constitutional Congress at this point, a Constitutional Convention, would be able to address the issues, because there are too few people yet in every state who understand what the issues are. Who understand the differences.
Okay, but what I really do want you to know, being in Windwalker on November the 10th, was just was a totally amazing experience, seeing the states come together. We elected people that were part of a committee. They went through different things. They actually decided things that people would normally have fought about. I spent a number of years in the Republic as a member of the House of Representatives. I think Jim Geiger is still president of the Republic, but as you and I were talking the other day, Tim Turner has been doing jail time, trumped up jail time, and you know, it just goes on. Part of what happened with us was people were not used to power, and they did not put their attention on necessarily the right things. Your counterpart in California is an incredible man named John Gorla, so I have the deepest respect for him, and he was a Superior Court judge of the Republic, and to this day he does research for people to help them educate them inside the system. And as I was mentioning to you the other day, I want to introduce you to him, Sherry St. Vincent, who's here. Sherry Geyer is in another conversation. Sherry St. Vincent's here. She does lots of research. We've got a golden opportunity here, Anna. There's things that you know that we can step into. Paul, I don't know what you do with a native Hungarian who comes to the United States and is just incredibly connected and well-tuned and generous with his time and his thoughts. I mean, I know Paul is a gift from God, just like you and I actually got into what it was that we knew what we had to do. This is our 30th year on radio. Some of the years have been much harder than others, but I know this is my work. I have zero doubt about it. Paul has showed up. Randy Shannon, oh my God, Randy Shannon. You should see the battles that she's taken on. Randy, you're so quiet. Make a noise.
I'm just listening and revisiting the things that I had already come to learn. So, you know, when you say these things anywhere out in the public, in the press, media outlets like this, you know, you get labeled as crazy, but it's all there in writing. Am I correct?
You're right.
Where can people go
public
to see this?
Oh, boy. Well, I made a stab at collecting the facts, you know, sort of a bare-bones approach, and did a cartoon book called You Know Something Is Wrong When? An American Affidavit of Probable Cause. And you can just go on to Amazon, click that title, and it'll come up. And it goes over all the basics. It explains how we got here and all these things that we're discussing this morning in a cartoon format. We decided to make it simple enough so that a normal high school student could read it and grasp it all pretty easily. And yes, we did document that as we went, so you know, you can actually follow along and look things up and find the information yourself. But yes, it is all public record. It is all in the treaties. It is all explained. So,
talk to us about, time is going so fast. Talk to us about what we can do to support Trump and what his situation is. Because as far as I'm concerned, he really is draining the swamp.
Well, I think that Donald Trump is a brilliant businessman who, like most of us, didn't have a very solid grasp of exactly what the various offices of the president are. And I say offices because a president can be serving as the president of the United States, which is a corporation, right?
Right.
Or he can be serving as president of the United States of America, which is, if it's incorporated, is just another corporation. If it's unincorporated, it's the actual government. All right? So we've got the unincorporated United States of America, which is the actual government. We have a corporation called the United States of America Incorporated, which is just a governmental services corporation, okay? And we have the United States, which is a separate foreign government, if it's unincorporated. And if it's incorporated, it's just another governmental services corporation at the federal level. So you've got the President of the United States, and you have the President of the United States of America. And Donald Trump, because he's not a lawyer, can serve in either capacity. You see, there are actually four offices there right out of the box. There's,
it's like be on the cabinet.
No, I mean the President has four offices right out of the box. He has the unincorporated United States of America, the incorporated United States of America, the unincorporated United States, and the incorporated United States. So he has four different offices right there that he can potentially occupy. And Donald Trump, because he is not a lawyer, can occupy all four if he so chooses. And that's what scares them all.
Oh, that there are four.
Pardon me?
Does he even know there are four offices?
I don't know if he does. But I know that there are people who do know that there are four offices, and they're scared silly because he can exercise all four. He's the first president in a long time who isn't a lawyer.
Wow.
I think he's the first one since Reagan. I'd have to check that, but he is the first in a very long time who has not been a Bar Association member, and as a result, he can do things Bar Association members can't do. And that's scary to the powers that be.
I get it.
Now, Donald Trump has been taking a lot of hard hits because of that fear. That he doesn't deserve. He has acted very intelligently, and he has used his business acumen to get the country at least pointed in the right direction. After 8 years of Obama, whose principal mission was to bankrupt both the United States Incorporated and the United States of America Incorporated, which he succeeded in doing, it's a great relief to see somebody in there who instead is trying to build back and kind of ride the wave down. Now, essentially, people need to understand that Barack Obama attacked America while sitting in the highest office of the incorporated government. As an attorney, he could not occupy the unincorporated offices because, as getting back to the Titles of Nobility Act, as a result of the Titles of Nobility Amendment, which passed and was ratified in 1819, attorneys cannot hold office in the land jurisdiction government. So when an attorney is elected president, he doesn't have the ability to occupy the unincorporated offices. He can only act as the CEO of the corporations. Well, Barack Obama was a lawyer. He couldn't occupy our public offices in the unincorporated capacity. So for the next 8 years, he destroyed the corporations that he was in charge of. He bankrupted them. And in 2015, he liquidated, in bankruptcy, Chapter 7, the United States municipal government. And then, shortly thereafter, the United States of America, USA, Inc., was placed in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, reorganization. So now you have these two gigantic, world-spanning corporations, one representing the municipal government of the United States and the municipal government of all these other countries like Australia and Canada in all capital letters. Those are all franchises of the Washington, D.C., United States Incorporated. And it's the same thing with the territorial governments. They're all in reorganization, because the USA is in reorganization, and they're all franchises. So worldwide, you've got a Chapter 7 liquidation of the municipal governments going on, and you've got a Chapter 11 reorganization of the territorial governments. And that's what Barack Obama did.
And
took him 8 years.
Everything about him traveling all over the world, talking to all these presidents and stuff.
Right.
That's a violation of the Constitution.
Well, that's him trying to make good on the bankruptcy. He's trying to deal with the bankruptcy in a way that's going to benefit him and his political cronies. However, here's the problem. They were going to try to grab everything under all those franchises and put all the assets into a giant worldwide trust, similar to what they did here with the public charitable trust. After the Civil War, a church-sponsored organization, merely calling itself the United States of America Incorporated, took over providing the federal services. And that same tradition in various forms is what we're dealing with here now, is that we have another form of USA Inc. that's in receivership. Okay?
Yeah.
So with the municipal governments being liquidated, all those franchises that were formed as franchises of the United States are being rolled up into this giant bankruptcy, right? So that means your estate trust, your SESTA-K trust that were created after the Second World War and which were housed in Puerto Rico, are now subject to that municipal bankruptcy. And that's what I've been dealing with most recently, is that you were misidentified as wards of the state where you were born. If you were born in California, you were misidentified as a ward of the state of California.
Rather than a king or queen.
Yes. And so now they're trying to take all these SESTA-K trusts that belong to the quote-unquote missing Americans, and they're trying to roll all of this into a giant trust, which would end all private property ownership permanently.
You know what? They're not going to get away with it. And I get what they're doing, and I appreciate you putting it out, but too much is coming to light right now. That absolutely isn't going to happen. I'm sure of it. I know they can't get away with it. But I'm wondering, when we have people like John McCain and Hillary Clinton who aren't in jail, how do we get them there? As kings and queens of California and the different states that we're in. Because it's like, that's something for sure. I've seen all the polls, and something like 85% of the American people think Hillary should be in jail. But the question there for me is, well, which clone would you put in jail?
Well, I think that the thing that they should put in jail is the Clinton Foundation. It's a corporate entity, and it is it's messing up billions of dollars worth of actual money that should be the people's money. And they're taking in a lot of bribes and stuff from foreign governments. You may have seen that the Queen just gave Hillary $241 million for no apparent reason.
That's outrageous.
Well, yes, it is. But anyway, it should be the Clinton Foundation that they take down the power base as a corrupt and dishonest corporation. They really don't have any grounds to exist. And why should they be able to funnel all this money around tax-free wherever they please when they're a bunch of crooks?
Especially when you take a look at what happened in Haiti and different things like that. It's like, I don't see how all this can keep being ignored. Or maybe it's not ignored and I just think it is.
You have to realize that, number one, all of the media in this country, except the small media, is owned by foreign interests that benefit from our enslavement. Okay, so first and foremost, as Malcolm X said, only a fool lets his enemy educate his child. Well, we've been letting our enemies educate our populace since World War II. And the media that does exist, the large-scale media, the Turner Broadcasting-type media, Viacom, all of that, they're under a government gag order that has never been lifted since World War II. So they can't report on these things. It's just mom-and-pop organizations that can report on the actual factual stuff that people need to know in order to get through all this.
Wow. Listen, I want you guys to know that when you go to AnnaVonWrites.com, good old Steve, bless his heart, who put this website together, Paul Stramer, he has listed 677 articles. I don't know when the last one got posted, but I talked to Paul the other day, and that's how we're talking to Anna right now, and I just want to make sure that good old Paul, who's a retired lumberjack and committed his life, and when I read that introduction at the beginning of the program about people who have given their lives and their fortunes, that's not just the people in the War of Independence and the Declaration of Independence and such. That continues to this day, that there are men and women out there that are doing this work. And when you realize that we have 677 posted articles from this very interesting person here, this amazing judge, go over there and check that out. I want to make sure that you don't miss that. And that's AnnaVonWrites.com. And Paul, just bless your heart and thank you so much for what you've done. And keep going, buddy. We really for winding up into the part of the program here. And Sherry, if you would say something, we've got about a couple of minutes. If you would say something about what you've heard today to Anna or a comment that you would like to make, I would like to hear from you.
Well, I've learned a lot from Anna today, and I really appreciate it. But I have a question, Anna. Could you speak about your American States and Nations Bank and what's happening with that?
Okay, well, it goes back to the delegated and undelegated powers. If you go back to the land jurisdiction, reclaim your birthright status as a Wisconsinite, as I did, or a Californian in your case, Val, then you are in a different status within the international jurisdiction. You're operating under undelegated power. Well, what was delegated to the British King? The realm of commerce. All right? So there are two kinds of banks you can have that function internationally.
You can have an international trade bank on the land jurisdiction, the international jurisdiction of the land, or you can have a commercial bank. And gradually the commercial banks killed off the international trade banks, and they purposefully and unlawfully, for the most part, converted everyone to be a franchise of the federal corporation in order to be able to do business with them. All right? So what you've got are commercial banks, and commercial banks trade in paper. They trade in securities and bonds and stocks, and things of this nature, right? But what you think of, if you're of a certain age, as a bank that makes actual loans, that deals in real money, and that gives private account services, then you're talking about an international trade bank. And what's happened is that because we haven't had any international trade banks operating in this country for a very long time, we didn't have that linchpin to be able to link the private and the public sectors together anymore. So we created the Asan Bank. We chartered the American States and Nations Bank in order to form that linchpin between public and private, between trade and commerce, so that people could continue to operate as Californians or Texans, and to operate privately and not be citizens and not be franchises, but still be able to access bank services and have private accounts and have repository services and all those other things. So starting the American States and Nations Bank, which is an international trade bank, was the first step in reestablishing international trade banks in each and every state, which will then be able to provide the kinds of services that you're familiar with in terms of checking and savings and all of that. But you will be able to operate in lawful money.
So left, okay, is one of your articles, you know, the 677 that I mentioned, does one of the articles cover this?
Oh, yeah, I think there are several articles about the American States and Nations Bank.
And do you have the numbers, Jan?
I don't, but, you know, the title will carry American States and Nations Bank.
Yeah, we're in the last 2 minutes of the show, so I want people to be able to go over to AnnaVonWrights.com and look this up. And what I want to do is say, Anna, thank you very much for being here. I'd like to invite you to come back. Are you available next week?
Possibly. We can talk about it over the course of the week. I don't see why not.
And I thank you, Sherry and Randy and Paul. This is one of the most interesting programs I've ever laid ears on, Anna. We just want to keep you going. This program has been brought to you by Kirkgaard Intergalactic Media, our radio partners, Coney Company, Happily200.com, HeavenIncorporated.com, Dr. James Murphy, John Denver, Dr. Joe Wallach, Tippi Hedren, Carol Shannon, Deepak Chopra, Ed Asner and Dennis Weaver, Larry Hagman and Esther Williams, Admiral Eugene Carroll, Jane Goodall and Jonathan Granoff, Dennis Kucinich, Chris Burgard, Paul the Plumber, Terry Cole Whitaker, Sherry St. Vincent, Lonnie Hogan Miller, Roger Stone, Anna Von Wrights, David R., descendant of King David, RandyShannon.com, Edward F. Group III, Chalene Nightingale, and DrValerie.com, and Dr. is all spelled out. Thanks to Paul C. Bragg for leaving us your daughter, Patricia, to continue your work. A big thanks to our team at Voice America, Jeff Spadard, our producer, Ryan Treasure and Randy Jackman, our friends at Cumulus Radio, Mike Vitale, Mary Flynn, Ron Simon, and our research director, U Rock Pace. To John Young at Totally Gospel, a big thanks for all the airtime and friendship you've given us over the years. A big thanks to our webmaster, Joseph Chung. Merci beaucoup to Ben Magan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People, which is available to you as a free MP3. Next, we'd invite a friend to listen. Be kind to yourself and someone else, and hop on over.
And you're not crazy anymore.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for all in you, pouring through, now your heart is open.